Welcome to Claim Your Confidence, a podcast that will introduce you to the most powerful people in the world. No matter what obstacles you face, Claim Your Confidence will inspire and motivate you to go after the life you want. Are you ready to claim your confidence?
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Claim Your Confidence. I'm Lydia Finette, podcasting out of Rock Center in New York City, and we are in for a winter to spring day today, and I am ready for it. Give me all the heat. I'm tired of this cold, and I wanted to change. So I am so excited about my guest today because there is no greater topic in this world than mental health right now. You know, as a mom of three kids, one who's on the precipice of her teenage years with the other two following in quick succession, I am always looking for resources that can help me keep up to what's happening and keep the lines of communication open with them about mental health. Mandy Teefy is the co-founder and CEO of Wondermind, the world's first mental fitness ecosystem. She's introduced a first-of-its-kind inclusive content hub aimed to provide mental fitness resources and change the narrative on how mental health is portrayed. In addition, Mandy is the mom of two amazing daughters, Grace Teefy and Selena Gomez, who is also an advocate for mental health. Mandy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me and for that amazing intro.
You know, as I was getting ready for this interview and reading about your life, I was really struck by two things. One, you have an unbelievable work ethic and an entrepreneurial spirit in everything that you do and have done. There's like never a time over the course of your life that you didn't take the opportunity and run with it, no matter the odds. But also, you've walked the walk with your own mental health struggles, which is why the creation of Wondermind is such a gift to the people out there. So start me at the beginning. Who were you when you were little Mandy?
Oh, little Mandy. I was really introverted. And it's kind of funny because I'm introverted still in a way, which I like to say introvert, extrovert. Like it's really hard to kind of explain because I'm really a private person. But I will talk and share my story if I feel like it can help people. But when I was younger, I was always, I don't know if insecure or just felt out of place. And so then when you feel a little bit out of place, you're not so confident with choices that you make. And I will later on as an adult realize that I had ADHD and that's what my struggles in school were for. So I was always working harder by nature just to understand and just to survive elementary school, junior high. And then in high school, I got pregnant with Selena at 16. And that's when my whole life kind of changed. I was just like, okay, I really have to do something here because there's a human that's going to be depending on me. I didn't have a lot of support. My family was supportive in that, but even my counselor at school told me, oh, look what you've done. I think that's when whatever needed to crack in me cracked. And then I noticed after I was able to do that and have a child and then still graduate high school, prom queen with straight A's, and then went off to a conservatory to study, I felt that's when I understood you get played a certain amount of cards and that deck is what you're going to play with. So you can either take them and make them powerful, or then you can just accept them and not do anything because you feel like there isn't a reason why you're held back. And instead of taking that opportunity and seeing what you can make it, if it's a hard lesson, it can really beat you down. And I just take them and go, okay, what am I supposed to be learning here? And that makes it a little bit easier to keep going.
Tell me a little bit about being 16 years old and having a baby. I've actually never had a conversation with someone who's had a baby at that age. Like, what is it like? Because you're such a child at that point, and yet you're also raising a child. I mean, is there that kind of awareness around something like that? Or is it something that just is like kind of part of your life? And, you know, much like my children, they feel like a right arm. You know, is that how it feels when you're young and having children at such a young age?
No, I don't think you at a young age understand the blessing that you've encountered. Can't speak for everybody. For me, it put me in survival mode at such a young age. And I've stayed there as much as you love your children and how much I love Selena. I did not understand the beauty of what was really taking place. And I did the best that I could do. And I spent every minute with her, but also every minute of trying to figure out who I was and also trying to figure out what my future entailed, because her father was in the picture, but he wasn't in the picture. Like, we weren't a family. And I was the one working, going to college and taking care of Selena. The one thing that I wish I could go back and do is really appreciate that moment more, because you're right. You just go with it and it's just your world. And I've had like some kind of, maybe it's a wall of defense, but I've always had the mentality of, I'm living my life. If it's not affecting you, I don't really care what you think of me, you know, because that's for you to kind of unravel. But even at a young age, I was like, you know, I would get the looks, and I just remember taking all these tests, and I have to run out of the room because I had morning sickness. And I could tell by having Gracie later on in life what the difference was. And it gave us a great bond, me and Selena, but also we were growing up together. So, you know, I was trying to be a mother to her in a sense of the way that I wanted to be mothered. And I didn't understand I needed to give her the mother she needed instead.
You talk a little bit about the defense mechanism, but I wonder what that wall was like and how much you were building that wall at the same time, because I'm sure there were so many people judging you from the outside. I mean, I can only imagine what that was like. What did you do to start overcoming that and kind of break out of that shell? Or do you think, again, it was like you were just going with the flow and taking these things as they came?
You know, I think I still have a lot of that wall to knock down, because now my child is very successful. And everything she does is monitored and like under a microscope, which in turn, everybody has an opinion about everybody around her, including me and her stepdad who raised her. I think coming to LA may have rebuilt those bricks.
Yeah.
Built it up a little bit more, because I was thrown into the fire and had to like really learn how to read people really, really fast, because, you know, LA's fast, and her success went really quickly. She booked a show and then she was famous, and we're like, okay, like, how does this happen? We were just in Texas when it happened. We never came out to LA like searching and looking for it. I think at any time that I'm feeling some sort of adversity, I add a little bit more to that wall, because I need to protect my energy and I need to protect what I wanted be in the world. And you have too many people telling you what you should be.
Yeah.
And it's hard enough to raise a teenager at all, but throw in the fact that, you know, people are carrying her umbrella for her. And yeah. Like, I'd have to take the umbrella away and say she can hold it, yeah. You know, like try to keep them as grounded as possible. And then I'll come on like your show and I will be so honest with who I am and what I've experienced, because it's the only way that it helps me understand why my life is so hard and to accept it and not to be down on myself, because it's all happening for a purpose. And I look at it all as something meaningful. And if we just look for that instead of looking for what's not working, you're able to kind of crawl out of that hole a little bit.
You know, it's interesting. We live in New York City. And one interesting thing about having children in New York City is a lot of the people who live here have become very successful in their own right and have achieved a high level of fame. And so that becomes kind of part of your norm where, you know, someone's mom, it happens to be the anchor on the biggest Today show in the world. You know, there are just all these byproducts of raising children here. And one thing that I talk about with my kids a lot is people are just people. They're just parents, like we're parents. And it's interesting because fame is an interesting thing, right? It puts you on a pedestal. People love to rip you down. That's all kind of part of the whole fame cycle, as we've seen. But on the other side of that, you're just a person, right?
Yeah.
You're just a woman who has two children, just like everybody else. But it's other people's perception of you. And that's got to be something that chips away over time. So you had Selena. And then what did you do next? You were 16. You were saying straight A's, graduate from high school, on to conservatory. What was the next step for you?
I understood immediately that I did not want to be an actor at the conservatory. And so I started PAing on productions, which was very little. I went and volunteered for a film festival. We raised money for cancer patients, not for cancer treatment. So like if you had cancer and you couldn't pay all of your bills, we would pay those bills while you're going through chemo. I think that was a huge influence on me understanding what we have an opportunity to do given a platform. And I was scrubbing floors and I wanted to. It was just like, it was the best thing ever. And I was just doing whatever I could do. And then, so I slowly worked myself up to producer. The mentality in Texas is different than LA. I feel sometimes here, when you're in the room, they're talking to you, but they're also scouring the room to see who's more interesting and who they need to go speak to. And in Texas, it's like, what can we do together as a unit? So I was very blessed to get all of my due diligence and everything out there because I see how what these young kids out here do.
So you left Texas at what point?
That was when Selena booked Wizards, and that was 2014. It was like a very last minute thing. They needed us there in 6 weeks. Me and my husband had just bought a house in Texas. I had a production company there, and we were just doing commercials and music videos. And we just packed up our car, and we didn't know LA at all. So we were just looking for the one place that would give us a 6 month lease, and everybody was wanting 14 months. And I'm like, well, I don't know the town well enough to do that over the phone. So we ended up in a loft in downtown, and it was hilarious and scary and just like the best time ever. Because at the same time, Demi Lovato and Selena, they did Barney together and they were like best friends, and she was coming out. So there was me, her mother, her little sister, her older sister, Selena, and Demi in a 1,200 square foot loft with one bathroom. It's like there were air mattresses everywhere. And it was one of the best times. We were kind of bummed when the lease actually did come up. That's where we started in LA. And then we slowly keep going further out into the valley. It was great having Demi and Selena there to support each other because Demi booked her first thing too as well.
Where were you mental health-wise at that point? I know at one point a therapist diagnosed you as bipolar, and then it turns out that that was not the diagnosis that was correct.
What happened is I went to see a bunch of different therapists, and coming from a small town, like they peg you one way or the other, normal or crazy. Like they, and so I was just like, maybe I'm in the crazy field, like, because I don't feel like I'm in the right place. And like, I would never use that word now, but like, that's how I was raised. And I was diagnosed bipolar, but I wasn't on medication when we came to LA. And I don't think it really started affecting me until my husband was coming out to LA to like stay with us. So I really think that the change really triggered whatever was kind of going on. And so I had to like, fine, I've been through so many doctors. And so medication scared me for a while, but now medications has essentially saved my life. So it's such a trial and error. And you really have to fight for it, which is why I think it's so important to have resources available for people who doesn't have the luxury to do that or doesn't even understand to do that. Because something in me had me go want to, you know, fix whatever I was dealing with and trying to understand myself better. And I just feel blessed that I was able to do that.
And did you find a lot of therapists who were able to help guide you? Because I do feel like it is a path, mental health. And as you get older, it does change. Isn't that correct?
It definitely does. Like when I was diagnosed bipolar and I just went into the new doctor out here and said, look, they told me I was bipolar. And she was like, okay, well, we'll try different medications. And this was really trial and error. And then I ended up on an anti-seizure medication and I was good. It really worked. And I felt grounded. I was happy. Everything seemed really good until I went into menopause. I went in very early menopause. And then the anti-seizure medication started causing me to have seizures. I was then having these really depressed moments, and I would be in them for a long time. And I'd just have to keep telling myself that, oh, I'm going to get through it. This is going to go away. It's just a phase. It's just a phase. And it was scary because I didn't know anybody to turn to. And then I was worried, did I pass it on to Selena? And then, you know, then I learned everything I could possibly learn about bipolar. We wrapped season one of 13 Reasons Why. And when we wrapped that, I said, okay, you're out here preaching this. You need to take your own advice. And I had to go away to take care of myself. And so I went to a facility for 30 days, and that's where they detoxed me off of all medication, ran every test. And they were just like, we're not really getting bipolar. We're getting ADHD, and you just had a lot of trauma.
One thing you alluded to before, and I wonder, as you think back over the course of your life, at one point you had your production company, and then you moved to LA, and your daughter's fame is rising, and you're her manager. I always wonder this when you have a child who becomes sort of a cultural zeitgeist in many ways. Like, how do you as a mom continue on in your own path, in your own life, while also fostering that relationship with someone who's on their own path at an early age?
Yeah, that is a really interesting thing. Everybody finds a path, like parents who do that, they go on their own path. And there's no roadmap for which way is the right way. Yeah. And trust me, I looked for that map, could not find it. And like, someone has to be on set with her because she's a minor. And people are always telling me and my husband, they were just like, well, why don't you pay someone to sit on set with her? And I'm like, I'm in a town where I don't know anybody. Why would I just not sit on set with her? And so we sat on set. We kind of co-managed at the beginning of her career, and then eventually managed. And it was really okay while she was, prior to like 18, we were able to really get along, and I was able to make decisions, and she was able to kind of like figure out what she wanted to do. And so you kind of have to live your life in a sense, like you already do with your children. Everything revolves around them anyways. This is just an amplified form of that. Then whenever she started getting a little bit older and she wanted to learn how to make these decisions on her own, it started becoming confusing for all of us because we were not having family time where work wasn't brought up. And, you know, and I remember one time something happened and I was like advising her as a manager. And then I was like, okay, this is a mom. What the hell were you doing? And we became a very like reclusive like family where we would just hang out with each other because it's all that we could do is trust each other. And definitely won't do round two. I tell my husband, if Gracie wants to do this, she's all yours.
So tell me a little bit about Gracie, because you said the things that you'd learned having Selena at an earlier age had sort of informed your later pregnancy with Gracie. So what was it like to have another baby? Because how far apart are they in age?
23 years.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. So it's really almost like two completely different lives in many ways and so many learnings.
But it's so funny how they fight. Gracie steals her sister's clothes.
Oh,
like she's That's hanging out with, you know, Selena's friends, and she's like, ah. I'm like, and so for her, it's just normal. I'm kind of interested to see how that evolves. You know, is like, sometimes we think it's great that it's normal because she's not going to be like impressed with it. But then is it so normal? Does she think that's her path as well? And if she doesn't succeed in it, you know, or whatever she would consider success, you know, it's a different jungle out here. Like, definitely.
It's so interesting hearing you talk about this because it's so funny to think how much we try to do as parents to protect our children. And when you have children who are that famous, there's nothing you can do because the world has its own opinion and you have to exist within it and you have to parent within it and you have to love within it and give them the confidence to move forward. Did you ever at times feel like you were completely lost and you were just like, I literally have no idea what to do? And if you did, who did you turn to? Who was the person who you were like, is there a better way to deal with this? When Selena's 18 and she's having these things, who are you talking to about this? Because obviously you don't want to be talking to people who could talk to other people.
Right. My friend in Florida who has nothing to do with the industry, her name's Lori Risco. I would call her and talk to her through it. But most of the time, that's why I feel like right around that time is where I really was getting more triggered with the ups and downs, because you can't talk to anybody about anything because it will spread like wildfire and it'll be the wrong story to begin with. It's very lonely and it's very empty. And then so you just, I'm confiding in someone who I know loves my family dearly, but also doesn't understand what I'm really going through. And then there were some moments when, you know, I would ask advice to other people that are in the business, and it always just seems like there's another agenda with their answer and instead of like helping. And so it was a trying time for sure. And lonely, very lonely.
You had a movie, and you talked about this earlier, called 13 Reasons Why, that took you almost a decade to get made. Can you tell me a little bit about this movie and the process? Because obviously the world has changed a lot in over a decade and more. But I'd love to hear how the idea came to you and then the steps that it took to get it made.
I went to Barnes & Noble, and for anybody who doesn't know, that's a bookstore. I was there to look for another property that her agent told me that she should consider, that they were adapting. And then I was just walking by, and I saw the cover of 13 Reasons Why, and I just stopped, and I sat there, and I read it from cover to cover, closed it, and called her agent and go, I know someone has this. Will you want to be a part of it? This is perfect for like Selena's demo and what they're going through. And because they would leave and send her like notes and about depression, and they were seeking for that answer. And so lo and behold, the author was about to sign a deal with someone else, and we flew him out and sold our vision of the project, and then he gave us the rights instead. And then you take that around town. You know, the story was about a girl who leaves 13 cassette tapes to the 13 different people that affected her towards the end of her time. And people were like, kids don't want to watch this.
What year did you do this?
It was right when we kind of got out here. So about 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think just it's interesting in the cultural context to understand when this was happening.
It wasn't talked about. Mental health.
No, exactly.
Not. And people would go, oh, a Disney kid and suicide, this isn't going to work. And it was like, look, let's just put it together. And if she's not the lead, she's not the lead. But like, we went through two studios as a feature, and then it just wasn't translating well into a feature. So we then decided to take a break on pitching it and going around town. So we waited for a couple years, and then TV started kind of making its like mark in the industry for the first time. And we're like, oh, this is a great miniseries, 13 Reasons, 13 episodes, great. So then we went out and met with different writers and discovered Brian Yorkey, who he'd never done TV. He only had done Broadway. I've never produced TV. And then the other producers that we brought on board had never produced TV. So we weren't only trying to change the world, we're trying to understand how to change the world and how to get it executed. It was great because I think it all worked out in the time it was supposed to, because Netflix was exactly where we knew we wanted it. That was the time when Netflix would write artist checks. And we got in there during that time, and we did. We went off and we consulted. We had survivors of suicide. We had parents who lost children to suicide. We had nonprofits, even, emotional support animals on set. And just every person put their heart and soul in it. And I think it needed to take that amount of time to find that group of people.
Timing is such an amazing thing. It really, I always say that. It's like you can push and push and push, and you think you think you know when something's supposed to happen, and then all those pieces kind of play out and you realize it happened exactly when it was supposed to happen. The response to it was what? How did you feel after you started seeing the incoming? Because, I mean, obviously the timing on that could not have been better given where we are in our world right now.
I remember before it came out, I was doing an interview and they said, are you really worried about what kids are going to think? I go, it's the parents I'm worried about. And it's because I know kids, that was their reality. That's what they dealt with. And they were yearning for somebody to speak for them. And then the parents, like as a parent, you don't want to see what that's what your child experiences. And then you also don't want to see your child through one of the bully characters. It was a 50-50 in the psychology community. After the debut, the suicide hotline went up by 100% and they go, look what you're doing. I'm like, they open the door to talk.
They're talking.
They're okay to talk. And we encouraged parents, you know, me and Selena did this together. So then we encouraged parents to watch it with their child or pre-watch it before you let them watch it. And that way you can have conversations and kind of say, well, is that something you experience? And I really felt it opened up that conversation in so many ways that have been shut down. It's not an easy topic. It wasn't easy to shoot.
Yeah.
It's not something that is gratuitous. And, you know, and it was just kind of like, okay, well, how do we tell the story? Because it needs a device. So it's like, oh, well, add a thriller element, you know, to keep the kids that might not want to watch the show that probably need to watch the show will tune in for, you know, because they had done a documentary called Bully. And any kid that went to see that, they're not a bully.
Right, of course. They want to see if the person gets their due, probably.
Yeah, for sure. And so we needed to, you know, figure out how to speak to everybody. And a lot of heart, a lot of passion. And when it came out, I just remember breathing, like sighing. And I was just like, if this is the only thing I do, I'll be happy.
Wow.
That wasn't true, but...
Yeah, well, for that day, at least.
For that day.
I have a friend who has a pediatric cancer foundation, and she often says that the reason she started Cookies for Kids Cancer is because nobody wants to talk about kids' cancer. Her son died of pediatric cancer when he was 6 years old. She's like, people don't want to talk about my son dying because people internalize that and think about themselves, and what would they do if that was their story? She's like, but if you talk about cookies, people will talk about cookies, and that's the entry point. And I think, you know, to your point about 13 Reasons Why, it allowed people to have that conversation in a sort of a circuitous way. They didn't have to be like, we're talking about suicide. It's like, let's talk about this movie. And that's the underlying theme. And I think that that is what changes people's lives fundamentally, seeing things that they recognize and are like, oh God, that's me. And then being able to call and being for it to be acceptable for them to call a hotline and talk about it is such an incredible step.
Yeah.
You and Selena started a mental health website to address this for this age group exactly, but really all age groups. But it's called Wondermind. Can you tell me a little bit about how you guys started this, what the idea was, where it is? And then I want to talk to you about a couple of things as I was flipping to the website for the past couple of weeks before this episode, the articles that I love so much. So tell me how it all started.
Well, after 13, we kept being proposed different things to do and nothing really felt right. And then we were doing an interview with Daniela Pearson from the Newsette. And she was, for the first time, she spoke about her mental health. And then she's like, what can we do together? And then we're just like, oh, okay, well, we see all these apps coming out and all these different things. Like, you have an app for this, you have an app for that, you have a book for this, you have a journal for that. Like, what could we create that is all encompassing? And so I was looking at like the business plan of Hello Sunshine and what it's accomplished for women. And it's like, we should do something like that for mental health. Mm. And we started out with a website and a dream.
It's all it takes.
And 6 months before launch, I got COVID, but I had had walking pneumonia for a year and had no idea. So when I went in the hospital, they were like, you have like 3 days. Like, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'll do anything that you say. And so I stayed in the hospital. They got me better. And then 2 weeks after I got out of the hospital, I was shooting the cover for Entrepreneur, and we were still trying to figure out the name of the company.
Oh my gosh.
And I always joke, because I came up with Wondermind, and everybody's like, how did you come up with Wondermind? I was like, well, I was in the hospital, so I say that the drugs gave me the name like, to help me survive. I was like, because I was like, I wonder what we should call it. I wonder, da, da, da. And I kept, like, that's all I was thinking about. And then as some nurses would come in, I'd be like, have you heard of Wondermind? They go, no, but it sounds familiar. And I'm like, that's definitely got to be the name, because it sounds familiar and it doesn't exist. So yeah, we built out the media side of the company, which is a newsletter that comes out twice a week. And then we have a content hub, and we have like 8 projects now that the strike's over that we're ready to go out and pitch. So we have film and TV. It's our podcast, Baggage. It debuted at number 2 under Jay Shetty. Again, showing that people want and need this content. And so during that year, we would do like studies with some of our rampant followers, and what are we missing? What are we not missing? And we really like to let everybody know that we're growing with you. We're in this together. Like, I'm not a doctor. Selena's not a doctor. And we are just, we're meeting the consumer where they are. And, you know, we're giving them that digestible content just to like create that space to where people are just talking about it. And we have like a huge announcement coming up March 10th at South By. And we're kind of growing out the rest of all the pillars for the company. So we will have tech, product, media, which is all kinds of anything. And then we're building out Wondermind Plus, which is going to have like video content and other things in other directions. So,
well, if you're listening, I would encourage you to hop on this site right now, because there is such great content. I mean, when I was looking through it, I loved the different types of articles, but also the candid conversation section of it. But you talk about postpartum depression, you talk about different kinds of mental health challenges that people have, and it really runs the gamut, and it normalizes it in such a way, because mm-hmm. you have these people who you look at and think, oh, they're doing really well in their life. And then you click on it and you're like, but they've had struggles. And it's so right. good for people to know, because I'm sure one of the biggest things, and certainly this is something that's part of your life, social media. You know, it has so many great things. And then on the flip side, it absolutely crushes people's soul. So the other side of social media is that, especially with young kids, it's like we have to figure out how to build their confidence and teach them to understand that this is not the real world, you know? And I think that right. that's something that you guys are so great at doing. And certainly Wondermind is doing that. And, you know, I say to my 11-year-old all the time, she's always like asking me for a phone. And when you can find an article that tells me that it's great for you to have a phone at your age, that's when you can get a phone. I need one article that tells me that social media is great for you and for you growing up. And she's right. just like, I don't think I'm ever going to get a phone. And that's not that's not the truth. But I do really think, you know, with our children and these lessons that we're teaching them, giving them a phone, but also giving them access to a website like Wondermind is such an important part of this. So every time they feel something, every time they see something and they don't want to talk to us, they know that they can click on that, look at those articles, and it normalizes it for them.
Yeah. 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 That I promise we won't write that article.
So Mandy, will you tell us about the Do Less Challenge?
We were all sitting around thinking about the new year and how it's all just like, do this. And, you know, you start all these things and sometimes they fall off, sometimes they work. I just was talking to editorial and I just said, what is it we're good enough as we are? Like, and that we're just gonna like be who we are. And then they took that and they created the Do Less Challenge. And it was one of the most successful things we have done. The turnout was great. It was every day they were given a prompt to do less.
I actually need someone to prompt me to do less. So I think I need to sign up for this. I feel like I do way too many things in a day.
I had to learn to do that. And that was editorial. They did that and put that together. And it's a great thing that we're contemplating on how we can expand on that and kind of keep that challenge going.
Mandy, as you look forward to 2024 and the years to come, What do you see in your future? What is it that you want to do now that you have this incredible platform and you're doing so much in this space? What do you think will come next?
I'd like to direct a project. I still have that storyteller in me. That would be my ultimate dream. Right now, I feel so blessed to be able to wake up every morning and do something that may help just one person, however long that ride's going to take me. You know, hopefully we're still chugging away and WonderMind is the hub of everything and that we can continue growing it. But yeah, I would love to direct and really give my time away to more like charitable efforts.
Well, I suspect that you will be helping many more than one person with this website and with the work that you're doing. And I look forward to watching and cheering you on.
Aww,
as
thank you.
A mom of three who will be using all of these resources as my children get older. And eventually, I guess I will break down and get phones for them. Mandy, where can we find you? Where can we find you aside from WonderMind? Is there anything you'd like to tell us about?
I am only on Instagram. So Instagram at Mandy Tiefy is it. That's all I have, because balancing that is enough. That's all I got.
That's what you got. Well, we will follow along with WonderMind as well and watch this journey continue and look forward to your big announcement on March 10th.
Yes. So exciting.
I'd like to thank everybody who is listening, and I always like to just say one thing or send a reminder to people or ask them a question at the end. But I think at the end of this interview, I would just say, maybe I challenge you to do a little less tomorrow. Wake up tomorrow and do less. And I will try to take that advice myself. Slow down, be present, all the things. I'm Lydia Finette. This is Claim Your Confidence. Again, Mandy, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you to Joe, my amazing producer. Thank you to Newsstand Studios. And thank you to Rockefeller Center, who sponsors this amazing podcast. I am Lydia Finette, and I will be back with you again next Tuesday on Claim Your Confidence. Have a great week.